the level of Mount Everest. What's that? Mountains don't have body fat? Neither does Dax Shepard. He gives me one of his signature full body contact hugs. Nice way to start the day. Tuesday, February 16th. Throughout the shoot, for general security and to prevent being seen by all of you industrious internet cuties, our scripts and sides, the mini scripts of the day's work, are all watermarked with our names on them. That way, if something leaks, they know who's to blame. The sides are numbered as well to keep track of how many copies are circulating. I tend to lose things on set to a ridiculous degree. Glasses, purses, phones. I'm always stashing things behind a cushion somewhere and then forgetting where I put them. I lose my sides 10 times a day, and I'm always borrowing someone else's. So as a joke, even if I'm only on my first sides of the day, they're marked LG number 4, as if I've already lost 3 before we've even started. Ha! I'll get you, AD staff. Eddie, my agent, comes to visit. Well, let's be honest, he came to visit his other client on the lot, world pro wrestling champion Ellen DeGeneres. At least that's what she does for a living in my book. She can't cut to commercial here. I'm drunk with power. Eddie tells me he has medium to high expectations regarding the outcome of the show, which, in agent speak, means, well, I'm pretty sure he just proposed marriage. Sarah Ramos, who played my niece on Parenthood, also comes to visit today. I put her in the background of one of the scenes. Can you spot her? My regular hair magician, Ann Morgan, is out for the day, and one of my favorite hair dudes, Jonathan Hanasek, is playing sub. He always knows the latest in top-secret Hollywood secrets, and today he tells me about software being developed for a camera that detects eye and mouth movement but softens everything else on a person's face into a pleasingly smooth, face-like blob. It's designed to help older actors look younger, I guess? Wow, weird. And where do I apply for this blob technology? Monday, February 22nd. Sutton Foster is in town. Sutton Foster is in town. She's just here for fittings and rehearsal, but we'll be back in a few weeks to shoot her scenes. I feel like we could play sisters in something, do you? See, photo 21. Wednesday, February 24th. Right around now, I realize that I don't know, and have never known, what the last 4 words of the show are. This may seem insane, given how excited everyone apparently is to finally learn them. Even worse, I didn't even know the last 4 words were a thing. I don't know how it's possible that I missed this information. Amy and I just never talked about it for some reason, and old lady Jackson doesn't know her way around the old tinternet too well, and somehow the whole hoopla missed me entirely, probably in no small part due to my insistence on using archaic words like hoopla. When I tell her this at work, Amy tilts her head and looks at me like she thinks I'm kidding. "I never told you what they were?" she says. "Wow." She can't believe it. "Well, would you like to know them now, or do you want to wait until the day we have to film them?" I have to admit, my heart starts pounding a little, and even though I didn't know until very recently that I've waited more than 15 years for this information, I'm still not sure I'm ready for it yet. I don't know. Who says the 4 words? I ask, stalling. "You both do," she says, meaning me and Alexis. And for a moment, I think, I still don't want to know yet. I want to draw it out even more. Maybe I'll try to guess them instead, but my mind is a blank. It's too much pressure. Fans and Mike Osiello, how did you handle the not knowing all these years? "Okay, go ahead," I say. "Tell me." I'm like gasping for air. It's truly ridiculous how nervous I feel. Amy then tells me the last 4 words. She says them quickly. I blink back at her a few times with no expression. Then I go suddenly calm. I realize I'm also holding my breath like I'm getting the result of a biopsy. When I finally exhale, I think my reaction goes something like, "Huh." And after that, it goes something like, "Really?" I'm still so paranoid, given all the fuss over them, that I'm not even going to say them here. Maybe you know them by now, anyway. The words are wonderful, of course, and have a simple symmetry, which makes perfect sense within the origin of the story of Gilmore Girls. They are not, however, what I was expecting, because they are not what I would call the exact definition of a conclusion, as in, they do not end the story we are telling as much as they introduce something that was not previously known, which to me is not precisely an ending. To me, they are really more of a... "Isn't that more of a cliffhanger?" I ask Amy. But Amy doesn't answer me. She just smiles. Friday, February 26th. Unbelievably, the first block of the schedule is over. This means we're finished with one-third of our work. Gulp. It's flying by. Today we begin several days of scenes at Miss Patty's, a series of town hall meetings. One of my best friends, Sam Pancake, yes, that's his real name, is here, playing a new character named Donald. I'd always wanted him to come on the show before, but there was never anything he was exactly right for. Still, I'd asked Amy and Dan about him so many times over the years that when everything was finally happening for sure, I couldn't help trying again. I started to tell Amy that as lucky as I already felt to be back, I was hoping for just one more thing. I know, Amy said before I could finish. We'll find a part for Sam. Ha! You'd think that finally having that dream fulfilled would be enough, but I continued to try to jam friends and family in anywhere I could. My friend Claire Platt walks through town in fall. My godson Clyde passes me near the gazebo in winter. May and other surprise friends play key or sometimes not so key roles. If you were a loved one who came to visit, I wanted it on film. Monday, February 29th. All the table reads have been fantastic. But today is the first half of our last episode, and there's a special electricity in the room. Because we're in the middle of filming, the fall table read is being broken into two. We'll read the first part today and the rest tomorrow. In the previous table reads, Kelly has been reading her part over the phone from her home in New Jersey, but she's finally here in person. Seeing her is wonderful, but it makes me realize again how much I'm missing Ed. He would have loved this whole experience so much. A word about fall. I couldn't read it for the longest time. It just so happened that we weren't filming any scenes from it in the first few weeks, so I could get away with it for a while. Amy kept asking if I'd read it yet, and I just giggled nervously. I'm not sure what was stopping me. Maybe fear of it all being over, or fear that I'd be disappointed in how the show ended after all this time. But the day I finally sat down in my kitchen to read it is one I'll never forget. I cried from start to finish. Tuesday, March 1st. The second half of the table read for fall. David Sutcliffe is there, even though he's shot his scene with Alexis already. It's so good to see him. We always had a special affection for each other, and I'm sad we didn't have any scenes together in the reboot. I ask him if he notices that this ending is not necessarily an ending. It's almost a cliffhanger, right? I mean, I'm right, right? I mention it to Amy and Dan, too, but they don't say anything. They just nod and smile. I don't know if it's the longest monologue in the history of television, like Amy and I discussed back in the day, but the speech I have about Richard near the end of the episode is certainly the longest I've ever had as an actor. I also think it's a beautiful tribute by Amy, both to Richard and to Ed. The whole episode is very emotional, and by the end of the table read, everyone is a total wreck. Wednesday, March 2nd. Our Netflix execs, Matt Funnell and Brian Wright, stop by and tell us the first 7 seasons of the show will start streaming internationally in July. I wonder if Alexis and I will get to travel to faraway lands. Yannick has to talk about The Sound of Music in a scene at the Dragonfly today, and he asks me to describe it to him since he's never seen it. He also wants me to pronounce Auf Wiedersehen for him. It turns out German words in a French accent are adorable. Gary, who was my assistant for 10 years, all through the entirety of the old show, visits. Gary had a cameo one of those years, but I'd love for him to have something more substantial this time. Another loved one to add to the list. Thursday, March 3rd. Scott and I have a big scene. During a break, I ask him if he's noticed that the ending is really more of a cliffhanger. He sort of shrugs. No one seems as bothered by this as I do. Kelly Wolf, the real-life mom of Max from Parenthood, plays a real estate agent in a few scenes with Scott and Kelly today. Worlds collide again. Amy and I discuss wanting to go to the smokehouse to have a martini and cheesy bread. Alexis and I talk about planning a dinner. None of us know it yet, but we won't have time for any of it until the entire shoot is over. Friday, March 4th. It's my first scene with Kelly and our first day on the Gilmore House set together. In the show, Emily has commissioned a portrait of Richard, and as we enter the living room, there's his face, 10 feet tall. For a moment, no one can speak. Then Kelly asks Ed to somehow make his presence known today by doing something big and loud. Later, during the scene, a key light goes out for no reason. "Thanks, Ed," she says. Tears. Thursday, March 10th. When I first read the Stars Hollow the Musical scenes in Dan Palladino's summer episode, I thought, oh, those could be sort of fun. But when I tell you I could have watched Sutton Foster and Christian Borle perform them all day, I am not exaggerating. Dan and Amy wrote the lyrics, and the music is by Janine Tesori, Fun Home, Shrek. The songs are amazing and hilarious. I could hardly keep a straight face. I predict this mini musical will go viral and be performed on college campuses everywhere. Later in the day, Sutton's character sings a more serious song to me, a turning point when Lorelai realizes she needs to go on a journey. You'll be shocked and surprised to learn I cried through every single take. It was a privilege to get to be in scenes with these two. Wednesday, March 16th. It's my birthday, and my dad, stepmother Karen, sister Maggie, and brother-in-law Rick have come to town to visit set and celebrate. Morgan and Tanya McComas, my makeup artist, decorate the hair and makeup trailer and shower me with treats, and everyone in the trailer shares some of the giant banana pudding from Magnolia Bakery. These ladies have taken extra special care of me during our run, and I'm grateful to them. My father, who recently retired, thinks it's a funny idea to take a picture in front of the Stars Hollow Pretty Pastures retirement home to try to trick his friends into thinking he's moving there. Ha! Thursday, March 17th. It's our last day of filming Stars Hollow the Musical at Miss Patty's, and the last day of work for Carol King, who's been on set for the last few days reprising her role as Sophie. It's also the last day for my dear Sam. After a long day of filming, it's a wrap, and everyone starts to disperse. Carol is petite and quiet, a sensitive observer, but today she stands up and walks with purpose through the crowd and over to the piano. Her hands hover over the keys, and she calls out in her distinctively raspy voice, "Anyone want to hear a song?" Everyone freezes. A few phones go up. "Can we film it?" someone asks. Carol smiles and thinks for a moment, then cheerfully says, "Nope." The phones go down. Word goes out over the walkies. Crew members squeeze into the already crowded room. A hush descends, and Carol starts to play. It is simply incredible. Because no one is worrying about recording it, we all get to truly experience this intimate mini-concert. Old Lady Jackson would be proud. I look around the room and see the faces of so many people I love. They're all lit up. Carol sings, "I Feel the Earth Move," and encourages us to join in, which we do, singing softly, swaying to the beat. At the end, applause fills the room. It goes on and on. She brings the house down. Then people start chattering, excited about what they've just seen. "We think it's over, but one more," Carol says. And then she starts to play, "You've Got a Friend." The faces. All the faces. Sally, Biff, Rose, my dear, dear Sam. My AD, Eric, who came over from Parenthood. Dan, Amy, old friends and new. You've never seen such happy faces. When I catch Amy's eye, I can guess what my own face might look like, red and puffy with tears streaming down. We smile at each other, shake our heads as if to say, "I still can't believe it. Can you believe it? We made it. We're here. These strange and wonderful days are actually happening." And just then, Carol gets to the part of the song I sort of forgot was coming, even though I've heard it a million times. "Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you've gotta do is call." I'm gone. Destroyed. A sniveling mess. Later, as everyone is filing out, Amy and Dan find me and tell me that what's funny is that Carol doesn't even know the episodes are named after her song, or that they're in that very order because of it. They haven't even asked her yet if they can use that song somewhere in the show, although they want to. It's just the song she chose to play. Another incredible coincidence. I nod and blink back more tears. At this point, I'm not even that surprised. I've come to accept this unique, magical time. Charmed days and another funny miracle. Friday, March 18th. It's the night we're filming the last scene of the show, the final four words. Anyone who comes to set has to sign a confidentiality agreement. Alexis and I shoot the ending, and that's followed by these incredible sequences with dancers flitting by in gauzy skirts. Scott pushes me on a sort of rolling cart through a tunnel of greenery, and I feel like I'm flying, like I'm Alice in Wonderland. Scott and I have one very brief dance move. It lasts a few seconds at most. But Marguerite, the choreographer, says she can tell I have some natural ability. I'm sure she just said it to be nice, but I still haven't stopped bragging about it around the house ever since. Monday, March 21st. I wake up in the middle of the night thinking about coffee. Is Lorelei drinking enough coffee? Personally, I'm practically made of the stuff at this point, but I make a mental note to ensure she is too. May comes to do her cameo, but she's very, very ill. She has a terrible stomach flu. So if our brief scene seems a bit off to you, it's because our main intention was to get through it before she needed the vomit bucket again. Hollywood, it's all glitz and glamour. Michael Osiello also has his cameo today. He sends me a nice note about it afterward, telling me how emotional it was to be there. I feel you, bro. Wednesday, March 23rd. Today we're filming the opening shot of Winter, and of the whole series. Even though we've been shooting for a while now, I'm so nervous I hardly slept. Overnight, the town has miraculously been decorated and covered in snow. I'm not sure what they make it out of, but I'm pretty sure I still have some on my Ugg boots from the first time we made the show. Alexis and I walk arm in arm through the town, as we've done so many times before. I'm all right in the morning, but a bit later, I can barely get through the line. I smell snow. We've been at this for a while now, but I still can't seem to get a grip. Tuesday, April 5th. Hey! Is that the same bike as last time? A random crew guy from another show calls out as I go whizzing by. New bike, same character, I say. I'm having deja vu, and so, apparently, are other people. My editor, Jen Smith, visits and is worried about the book deadline. She spends the day on set and sees how many hours I'm working, how short the writing time between setups is. Do you think you're going to make it? She asks. She looks very nervous. I feel bad. I wonder if we'll ever work together on a project where I'm not actively raising her blood pressure for months at a time. Let's be honest, probably not. Melissa does Ellen and announces she'll be a part of Gilmore Girls, then comes to visit the set afterward. I haven't seen her in ages, but it's like no time has passed. She's wearing a gorgeous floral dress that she designed. Melissa has always been an incredible decorator with great taste, and we had fun comparing notes when furnishing our first houses, which were right down the street from each other. We all stand around chatting, Melissa and her husband Ben, me and Yannick and Amy and Dan, until work finally calls us back. Just like old times. Today's scenes are with Kelly, where Emily Gilmore has read The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up and has decided to get rid of almost everything in the house. There are Gilmore antiques strewn about on every surface. It's a funny scene on one level, but it's also about how Emily is struggling to move on, and Kelly is characteristically fantastic in it. The Entertainment Weekly cover about the show isn't supposed to be out for another week, but we learn it's been leaked online. The publishers are shocked. The only other time they had a breach like this was when someone got a hold of their Star Wars cover before publication. Nice company. Thanks, internet hackers. Saturday, April 9th. May surprises me by booking massages for us at our favorite place. Usually we have to book weeks in advance, and I ask her how she got us in with such short notice. She admits that she pretended to be my assistant. Apparently my assistant's name is Mindy, and she's cordial but firm. Monday, April 11th. Rachel Ray is here. She's a total doll and does a fantastic job in her scene. See photo 22. Tuesday, April 19th. Roy Choi is here. He's extremely nice, but I forgot to ask for a photo. He's an intense and smart guy and comes extremely well prepared for his scene. In between takes, he discusses the similarities between being a chef and acting, noting that both professions require individual precision while maintaining an awareness of the whole. Whoa. During the scene about whether or not we should fire Roy, Yannick keeps saying baloney instead of abalone, which cracks everyone up. Apparently, he's never eaten either. Gary, I still need to find a part for Gary. The props man, Mike, has asked me every day this week what I would like to eat in the upcoming camping scene instead of the dehydrated meatballs that are scripted. He needs to make them ahead of time and make sure he has plenty on hand in case we do a lot of takes. Chocolate meringue balls? Coconut macaroon balls? Veggie burger balls? For some reason, I can't decide. Can I tell you later? I ask. Wednesday, April 20th. May and Alexis are cast in a reading together. Really, worlds, could you collide anymore? I wish I could have been there to see the magic of my two most special ladies on a stage together. Friday, April 22nd. We just heard that Prince died yesterday. Amy was a giant fan and saw him in concert many times, and everyone is generally depressed about the loss. My high school yearbook from my senior year appears in the mail. The wife of a friend from high school found it in storage. I gave it to her now husband to sign on the last day of school, and he forgot to return it to me. So that's how I can finally reveal to you my other longtime passion, one I've never before discussed, the time I spent dedicating my young life to interbuilding communications. Huh? That's my high school boyfriend Charlie over my left shoulder, which may have had something to do with my involvement in this club, but I have zero memory of it otherwise. See photo 23. I guess if you ever find yourself in Northern Virginia and you're wondering whom to thank for how well all the buildings there seem to be getting along, well, that would be me and my bangin' sweater vest. The props guy is back. He really needs to know what I would like to eat in the dehydrated meatball scene. Granola cluster balls, turkey meatball bites, actual dehydrated meatballs. I still can't decide. I ask if I can let him know later. He sighs. Saturday, April 23rd. From the first time I read the script for Fall, where Lorelai goes off on a wilderness adventure, I knew that Peter had to play the role of park ranger. In some ways, in real life, Peter is a park ranger, and doing something outdoorsy and nature-related for a living is definitely another way his life could have gone. Plus, the character appears late in the show, and I thought it would be a fun surprise for you to see him. His ABC show, The Catch, very kindly cleared him to do it. But now it's 2 days before he's due to work with us, and something has come up. They've lost a location for an important scene and have to do some switching around, which means now they can't spare Peter for the whole day. Park Ranger is in two lengthy scenes, both in Malibu, which is easily an hour from anywhere else in Los Angeles, so we have to think fast. Maybe we can split the two scenes into two different roles, but who else can we call at this late date? How can we pull this off? Monday, April 25th. We pulled it off! Thanks, Jason Ritter! See photo 24. Wednesday, April 27th. Someone casually mentions that today is our last day on the set of Lorelai's house. Wait, what? For the first time, I realize we are really and truly near the end. 10 days left of filming. How did that happen? It occurs to me that I should take something from the set as a memento. For years, journalists have asked whether I took anything from the set of the old show, which I didn't, since we had no idea at the time that our last day was our last day. My blue coat was something I went home in one day and sort of forgot about until it was time to come back. Besides, they always seem more interested in intentional hardcore theft anyway. I'm not sure at what point taking things from sets became a time-honored thespian tradition. I can't picture Ingrid Bergman stealing from the set of Casablanca. But I know I'll be asked, so I start looking for something. I text Alexis to see if she wants anything. She hasn't left for the day yet and says she'll come down to the set and look, too. There is no stranger feeling than the two of us wandering around our house trying to find what we want to take. Was this here before? We keep asking each other. So much has been reconstructed, plus Lorelai's kitchen has been updated, so everything is sort of familiar, yet also new. Alexis takes a Yale banner down from the wall of Rory's room. I take a pink flamingo made of tin that hung on the wall in the kitchen. I had no particular connection to this flamingo, but I do now, because it will always be the story I'll tell about the thing I took. I also take a few framed photos and an apple-shaped magnet with Rory's face on it that says, "You're the apple of my eye." Alexis cracks open a split of champagne she's been saving, and Alexis, Amy, and I share a brief toast before going back to work. So long, Lorelai's house. It's sad to say goodbye, but at least this time I know it's our last day together. Although, does anyone else notice that the ending is really more of a cliffhanger? Thursday, April 28th. The producers of The Royal We, which I'm supposed to be adapting right now, call to ask how the script is coming. I take a deep breath, put my most professional writer hat on, and call them back and say something like, "La la 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 la, I can't hear you." Luckily, they're nice about it. We find a part for Gary. He can play the docent in the Whaling Museum scene with Kelly. But the part shoots Monday, and Gary is in New York. Can Gary get to L.A. by Monday? Gary is going to look into it. Monday, May 2nd, 3 delayed airplanes and 1 harried overnight journey later, Gary makes it from New York. After his scenes, we sit in my trailer, catch up, and talk about all the long days and late nights we shared for 7 years. For some reason, reminiscing with him makes me realize, really, for the first time, that we're almost done. Tuesday, May 10th. It's the second to last day of work. Getting Melissa back was the final, and in some ways to me, most important piece of this puzzle. I can't tell you what a joy it was to be back in the kitchen as Lorelai with my best friend, Suki. I'd missed Melissa terribly in real life, too. After work, Melissa and Yannick and I go out for a drink. We talk for hours, and I could have stayed for hours more, but I have to try to get some sleep. Tomorrow is our last day, and it's going to be a long one. Wednesday, May 11th. The day we've all been waiting for is finally here. I'm not just talking about our final day of work. It's also the day I must answer the deep philosophical question this book's been asking, which is, what will I eat instead of dehydrated meatballs? I think you'll be relieved to know I went with coconut chocolate balls. Finally, with this global political issue settled, you can return to your lives. Alexis and I spend most of the day shooting a scene that takes place in a New York City hotel room. Rory comes back after having a fling and worries it was a mistake. Lorelai tries to counsel her. Alexis plays the scene with a perfect blend of panic and humor. The rest of our sets have been taken down already. This is the only one left. And as we finish up the scene, I'm already feeling sad. I'm going to miss Alexis so much, as well as the special connection we share. The last shot of the night and of the show is a recreation of a sort of tunnel that Lorelai, Luke, and Rory go through, a short pickup of a shot that we started outside at night but didn't have time to finish on the back lot many weeks ago. It will make sense when you see the show, but it's part of a sequence that's sort of magical. It's set to the Sam Phillips song, Reflecting Light, and has no dialogue. I can count on one hand the number of scenes I had over the years on Gilmore Girls that didn't have dialogue, which adds to the strangeness of it all. Some people have started to assemble near the monitor, members of our production staff, our ADs, and their assistants, some folks from the office. There's nothing to see, exactly, but I know they're gathering around us to say goodbye, to be there for the end, and there's an electricity in the air. We three pass silently together through this passageway 5 or 6 times, and then, finally, that's a wrap. I've shed so many tears over these weeks and months that while I'm very emotional, I'm also nearly dry-eyed, almost like I'm in shock. Amy and I hug, Scott and I hug, Dan and I hug, Alexis and I hug. We all stand around a bit awkward, not exactly sure what to do next. We take some pictures, trying to capture a moment that's impossible to capture. In them, I look completely dazed. Later, still dressed in the pajama bottoms I wore in the scene, and a top too, don't worry. I meet some cast and crew at the smokehouse, our neighborhood haunt, and we talk for a bit and say thank you and look at each other, still a little dumbfounded. We did it, right? I mean, we did it, didn't we? No one knew if it would ever happen, and we still almost can't believe it really did. After a drink or two, I head back to my trailer to pack up a few more things before it gets too late, and I realize I can't find my blue coat. Did I leave it on set like I always do? A call down to the stage tells us it's not there. The ADs get on the walkies. They've all seen this coat around me or on me or near me almost every day, so everyone knows exactly what they're looking for. Plus, it's long and puffy and blue. It can't have gone far. But no one has seen it. When was the last time I had it? Today? I don't think so. It was boiling hot all day, just like it was yesterday. Yesterday! I remember now. It was cool in the morning, but by lunch it had heated up. I walked my bike over with Yannick and Melissa to the stage where they were serving our farewell lunch, then left the bike outside the stage with both the green leather jacket I'd been wearing in the scene and my blue puffy coat draped over the handlebars. I wore the green leather jacket in a scene again today, so wardrobe must have picked up the blue coat, too. Phew. They're still here packing up. Brittany probably sent it to the cleaners for me. But in the wardrobe trailer, she tells me that when she grabbed the green wardrobe jacket from my bike yesterday, the blue coat wasn't there. In all the years I worked there, I thought of the back lot as a sort of extension of my house, since I often spent more time there than at my actual house. It made sense. But it's different on the lot now. Warner Brothers gives tours there now, which means it's much more crowded than it used to be, and there are a lot more people passing through. But still, throughout this whole shoot, I've left things all over the place and they've always come back to me. So I don't want to think the worst, but maybe tweeting that picture when the show was announced made it a desirable or a fun collector's item for someone who was passing by. By the way, if that someone is you, no hard feelings, but can you mail it back to my manager in Los Angeles, John Carabino, no questions asked. For you at Scotland Yard, here's the last documented sighting of my blue coat. See photo 25. It's just a coat, I know, but I held on to it for so long. I never wore it once after work ended on the original series, because how obnoxious would it be if you saw me wearing it in the grocery store, like, oh, look at me, I wear a big puffy blue coat that says Gilmore Girls. I'm not even sure why I kept it. When I put it back on for the first time, there was a dried-out sugar packet in the pocket from 2008. I hadn't touched it since then. We once had a terrible winter of moths eating all our sweaters, but somehow they spared this coat. Even they must have known I was going to need it again. For Gilmore Girls, a year in the life, it was with me every day. It kept me warm and dry and billowed out behind me as I rode my bike across the lot in the wee hours of the night. So I can't help feeling a little sad it's gone. But it's our last day, and the coat has served its purpose. Our work is over, and it's May in Los Angeles. The sun is blazing, and I don't need it to keep me warm anymore. Of course, for sentimental reasons, I prefer to have it. But I think of the 70 incredible days of this shoot, all the people I'm so thankful for, all the love that went into making this show. I think of Emily in her Marie Kondo scenes, giving things away because she's learning a new way of being thankful for the past, realizing it's just as important to welcome and embrace the future. And while her scene is about choosing to give things away rather than losing them or having them taken, in the spirit of what the book suggests, I decide that rather than mourn the loss of my jacket, I will be thankful for the time we had together. I thank it for hiding itself in the back of my closet with only a dried-up sugar packet to keep it company all those years. I thank it for standing by, for somehow letting me know I was going to need it again. I thank it for getting me through all 70 days of winter, spring, summer, and fall. I thank it for all it did for me, and then I let it go. After all, we waited a long time to get the chance to finish this show, and now, finally, Gilmore Girls is really and truly over. I mean, it is over, right? Yes, it is. It's over. But seriously, didn't you sort of think that ending was really more of a cliffhanger? Acknowledgements. My literary agent, Esther Newberg, was one of the first to take a chance on me as a writer. I'm so thankful to her for her encouragement and for navigating me skillfully away from anything resembling monkey doodles. I'm honored to have been able to work with the team at Penguin Random House once again. Thank you for your support, Gina Centrello, Cara Welsh, Jennifer Hershey, Kim Hovey, Cindy Murray, Susan Corcoran, Kristen Fassler, Shona McCarthy, and Paolo Pepe. I was thrilled to get to work with Sarah Weiss for the first time. A special thanks to early readers Ilana Seplajoli, Anne Spire, and Julia McGuire. Your input was invaluable and came at a time when I needed a boost the most. Amy Sherman-Palladino gave me the role of a lifetime. I'll keep thanking her for that until the end of my days. I'm also thankful to the accidental writing school I got to attend thanks to years spent speaking her words and those of Dan Palladino. I'm thankful to all the talented writers I've been lucky enough to work for as an actor in television and film, especially Jason Kadams and the Gilmore Girls and Parenthood writing staffs. Thanks to Helen Pye for going above and beyond. Thanks to Elise LaPlante for her assistance during long days of filming and for knowing how to set up the Friday night margarita bar. I'm always grateful to my stellar team, Eddie Ablons, John Carabino, Adam Kaller, and Cheryl Mazel. Some friends whose early feedback always makes it better, thank you Kathy Ebel, Allison Castillo, Ellie Hannibal, and Mae Whitman. My editor, Jennifer E. Smith, deserves all the thanks and praise I can possibly bestow. Our first book together was on a rush schedule, and this one was on something called a crash schedule. Not sure what's left unless there's a San Andreas starring The Rock schedule. Through it all, she is generous with her intelligence, enthusiasm, and good taste, and I couldn't be more grateful. I am only saddened to have to inform her that, as a result of her excellence, she will never get rid of me. Last but first is family. Especially in this process, I rely on my sister, Shade Grant, as a mentor, friend, and fashion advisor in equal parts, though the jumpsuits are not her fault. Thanks to the Grahams and Grants and Krauses and McHales and Morelands, especially the one who isn't here yet, but whom I plan to soon spoil rotten. Thanks to Peter for taking such good care of me when writing moves in and eats up our regular lives. Thanks to my mom and dad, where all the stories began. This is Lauren Graham. Thank you for listening to Talking As Fast As I Can, From Gilmore Girls to Gilmore Girls, and everything in between. This program was produced and directed by Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2016 by Lauren Graham. Production copyright 2016, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.